What do you value more, physical strength or mental resilience?
I think they are actually intertwined because I need to physically exercise to be mentally fit.
Aaron Smith, founder of KX Pilates.
He's an award-winning founder of KX Pilates, which is Australia's largest Pilates franchise.
With over 100 studios
all over Australia.
Started in 2010 with $20,000 in debt.
To turning over $25 million annually in 2019-20.
In business, I was never the smartest person in the room, and I knew that from an early age. It was very, very difficult at the start. I learnt really hard the wrong way. I nearly ruined the company by the mistakes that I did make, but thankfully the right decision was made. I hated that first year. I had to stop drinking to stay mentally focused, stopped really going out and socialising because I didn't have the money. I was paying myself like $200 a week. So it was an absolute grind. If you ask me, would you ever do a startup again? Absolutely not. Oh, another big lesson I tell to up-and-coming entrepreneurs is to...
If you're interested in growing wealth through townhouse development, check out the Little Fish Network. You get coaching, expert access, and community support. It's essentially everything you need to win at property and development. Welcome back to Australia's number one podcast. We are the Little Fish, and we speak to the big fish about town each and every week. Please like, share, subscribe, follow, leave a review. As you guys know, 2024, we're donating $1 to this disease, our charity. It's the worst disease you've ever heard of. It is epidermolysis bullosa, and it's short-term EB.
And it's the worst disease you've never heard of.
I will get that right. The worst disease you never heard of. But that's what we're doing here.
Yes.
We're going to make sure you've heard of it. So please, guys, there'll be a link down the bottom to donate. But please just follow, leave a review, subscribe, and we're going to donate on your behalf. So there's no excuses.
Get into it.
Love it. Aaron, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You've travelled down from sunny Noosa, mate.
I have, yes.
Just we were talking earlier on that we all should be moving up there, but we're all slow learners down here.
Cyclone hasn't hit Noosa. It's staying up north, so it's still safe.
Yeah, that's right.
Come and join us.
That's right. Mate, like the story, you know, of KX Pilates, you know, people know it. I think, you're north of 100 franchises in Australia, so people understand it. But we'd love to hear how it come about, where it started, and hear about your journey, you know, to grow it to that amazing number.
Yeah, absolutely. So the style of dynamic Pilates I found. I was an avid traveler, snowboarder, growing up. I was in Colorado for a couple of years, where I was a personal trainer and snowshoe instructor before I jumped over to London, and I stumbled across just an ad for a dynamic Pilates studio. I had no idea what dynamic Pilates was, but as soon as I walked through the doors, Aussie guy at the time greeted me. He was the head trainer, and I just fell in love with the style of fitness. It was quite small, intimate group fitness. The instructor could, you know, perform and run around and didn't physically do the class as well, which was great. Music was pumping, clients were already fit, health conscious. And we were the first studio of its kind in London. The Pilates industry was very black and white. So you're either doing it the right way or doing it the wrong way. So we were seen to be doing it the wrong way, the rebels in the industry, which also suited my personality. So we got a lot of media attention because of it. You know, the celebrities and actors in London would come in, which helped us. And by the time I left, we had a couple of studios under the brand I was working for, but there were probably five or six other companies doing dynamic Pilates that were originally our trainers. So I learned a lot of things in business, what not to do in London, but I loved it so much. I just trained myself up to be the head trainer and also the instructor trainer in that studio. And then I always knew that I was going to come back and bring that style of fitness back to Australia under my own brand, KX Pilates.
So what year was that? Because you know, they were obviously pioneering it. You know, we had nothing like it. But what year was that? And what year was that starting to take off there?
Yeah, so that was 2006, 2009. I came back July 2009, opened KX Feb 2010.
Yes, and you essentially brought it back to Australia. Yep. Is that fair to say?
Yep.
Yeah, amazing. So you learnt it, you know, as soon as you saw it and you enjoyed it for a couple of years and learnt the craft.
Yep.
Were you just sure that this is going to work and I'm going to bring this back and people are going to go for it?
Pretty sure that, well, it was in a very illustrious part of like west end of London. So I knew it would work in the illustrious suburbs of Melbourne, hence why my first studio was in Malvern. I didn't realize at the time the scale that reformer Pilates would get to in the boutique fitness space. Boutique fitness was very much not around. There was a couple of yoga studios. Hot Yoga, Bikram was still pretty popular. F45 didn't come around until 2013. Yeah. So it was 3 years of, you know, that was the world of the 24/7 gym space, the rise of the Jets, the Snaps, the Anytimes. Yes. So, which was very hard for us because, you know, for $12 a week, you could get a full membership there. And I was trying to convince people to come to us for $30 a class. Yeah. So it was a very difficult time. And again, the awareness wasn't here. Pilates in Australia was physiotherapy based. So most physiotherapy clinics realized that they could extend their clients by an extra 10 weeks by bolting on a Pilates studio, small group, and in the form of rehab exercises with Pilates, they could extend their life of their client. In the fitness space, Pilates was at your gym, mat Pilates, boring as hell. And after 6 weeks, people are like, I'm out. This is not, you know, really, really exciting. So that's where the Pilates world kind of sat at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were traveling, you come back, you know, you start your first store. Talk to us a little bit about that, because I'd imagine, you know, there's money involved, there's investment, yep, there's risk, there's big days, you know, what was that time like?
Yeah. So I got back and I said to myself, I knew that I was, you know, from the first week I was in the studio in London, I was like, I'm taking this style back to Melbourne. It's funny, all my friends over in London are like, that's all you talked about over there was bringing it back. And, you know, congrats that you actually did it. But I got back and I sat down with my old man, and he'd been paying my credit card off when I'd been traveling. We added it up. I got to 20 grand, which we were both pretty shocked about. So I went back to work to try and pay that off. But I didn't want to go back into the fitness space until I had my own business. So I went back into the gaming and bar world that I had experience with as a teenager, but hated it. Lasted 3 weeks. Sat my old man down and kind of told him the dream of what I wanted to do. And luckily, my old man, he'd been pushing to me since a very early age that business is the way to get ahead in life, one huge advantage to get ahead in life. And he'd been in business for 45 years. So he was really supportive of what I was doing. A week later, we were in his business banking manager's office, signed. He guarantored my first loan for 120 grand.
Yeah,
and then the search began of trying to find a site. I was super green. My first landlord completely ripped me in terms of the deal. There was actually zero negotiations on the table. It was like, if you want this space, you've got to sign here, which I ended up doing. The studio opened Feb 2010. I knew nothing about business. I knew how to run a fantastic Pilates class, give a great experience, and connect with my clients. My personal training background in the gym space and working in America, I was good at schmoozing the wealth, the wealthy clients, and really getting them to enjoy their experience and going out and telling their friends. But in terms of business, I had zero idea. I didn't even do a pre-marketing campaign for the studio. I didn't even know what that was. So 2 weeks before I opened, I caught up with a colleague. He's like, tell me about your pre-marketing, you know, your numbers. I was like, what's a pre-marketing campaign? No idea. So it was massively, the first day I opened my doors, no one came in because I did nothing. So I was too busy trying to get the studio.
Sort of build it and they'll come type play.
Exactly.
And then you realize they don't.
And then they did it. And I was like, holy shit, let's get to work. So, you know, that was when I was an absolute sponge. I joined young entrepreneur groups, local business groups. I walked around and networked with all the local businesses in the area. Glenfrey Road was thriving in those days, and really connected with the community. And just slowly, one by one, you know, built the clientele up.
How big a deal was the education piece for this? Because I feel like you need to nearly educate the marketplace on the product that you've brought back to them.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't just done, I've opened up another coffee shop and people get it. You know, you need to sell what the concept is.
What the difference for me, like I'm still... So the difference between, say, the dynamic Pilates and traditional Pilates is a big part of it, the reformer, is that...
So we are just reformer. Small group, 12 to 14 machines in a room.
Yep.
We run up to 10 classes a day, 7 days a week.
So like Pete was saying, the capital in the beginning would have been pretty heavy. If you're machine heavy, then you need to get the... you need to get the fit out and all that kind of stuff. So how do you, I guess my question I'm trying, you were saying before you started, no one came, and then you go out and you met the community one by one. In my mind, I'm like, how do you retain those first few that rock up and there's no one else in the class while you're still trying to fill out the class. Does that sort of
make sense? So that to me was an advantage. So if there was no one else in the class except one or two people, I was like, I've got their attention for 50 minutes and I'm going to make them have the best experience and love me as a person, as the founder of this business. They're going to go, because everyone wants to train with the owner or the founder.
Yeah.
So to get that and really, really make them enjoy it that much, they'll go out and bring their friends next. Awesome. I gave out that many free classes as well. So I was just trying to fill spots because I just knew that as soon as they walked through the doors, I could provide something that they haven't experienced before. And at the time, we didn't have any competitors. We didn't have to have any competitors for like 4 years. So no one could go out and experience a KX class anywhere else. So before we even opened Studio 2 18 months later, I had people traveling half an hour, 45 minutes all over Melbourne just to come to KX. Like it was a pretty cool now, I mean, unless you're within 2 kilometers from your house, people wouldn't even bother training with you. But back then, people would travel to do it.
It's wild how early you were as well. It's crazy to hear that F45 started, what, 4 years after you?
Yep.
And they've almost gone on, they had an epic run and
absolutely
went overseas and stuff. No one can deny that. But feels like it's started to taper off over there. A lot of the studios are starting to close. Whereas you're, it probably leans into quick to rise, quick to fall maybe, because you seem to have been able to just this steady rise. And to me, I feel like you're still a fresh brand now. When I drive around and I see a KX Pilates studio, it still feels fresh to me.
Yep. So. Yeah, we try and stay on top of the market. Innovation is really, really big for us. We want to be the leaders. We want to stay, you know, front of mind to our consumers. There's so many brands, Curves, one of them, F45 now. They're a transactional franchise model, which is completely fine if you're happy to grow your brand as fast as possible, sell out at the right time, make a lot of money, and then watch your brand completely deteriorate.
Yeah.
I mean, Curves Fitness, I mean, that was the number one fitness franchise in the world. They sold 10,000 units globally. In Australia, they sold 650 units. They opened 400 and something. And then I think now they're down to 60 or 80.
That's crazy.
So it's really sad because, again, it was a private equity-owned company. It was a master franchise in Australia. They weren't allowed to innovate. So it was never really going to survive, where we kind of look at everything the opposite way. We're slow growth. We want to find the right people. We say no to more people than we say yes to. They've got to be a part of our family and understand our values and our purpose and really get along for the journey. We look at it as a long-term business partnership, which is what's completely different. And also that reflects how our business model is done as well, like a percentage of revenue model in franchising. So if they have to succeed for the franchisor to succeed, where the F45s of the world was fixed fee based. In the beginning, I think they changed it later, but it was like, if you open your doors, you pay me a fixed fee.
Yeah.
And if you make it shit ton of money, that's all yours. And if you don't make much money, that's your problem. But that's why they had to scattergun it, because they only made money from opening up multiple studios as many places as possible.
Yeah, right. Instead of growing the revenue, helping the franchisees grow their revenue in the existing source. That's crazy.
To Pete's point earlier about education, how much of that is for you to try and educate the market? Because is it largely the ladies that you're attracting? Are you trying to educate the fellas to try and get amongst your communities as well? Because it is a fair point, isn't it? What is Pilates? It doesn't make sense straight away. And once you get into it, it looks addictive and it looks like super fun.
Yep.
But it's that bridge point to actually get them from the concept to actually knowing what it is.
Yeah, so Pilates, for some reason that I'm unaware of, maybe because it was next to yoga in every schedule in every gym back in the day, everyone was like, is Pilates like yoga? It's so far away from it.
I thought they were the same thing, yoga and Pilates.
Mat Pilates, because it is body weight and you are on a mat similar to yoga, there are some similarities in that sense. But the reformer was always seen as an apparatus for rehab or for someone who was more in the intermediate to advanced space. So if you walked into a traditional Pilates studio, you would start on the mat, you would learn everything. And then once you got to a certain level, then you might be able to touch the reformer, where you walk in our doors as a complete beginner and you're on the machine straight away. This is how it works, this is how it operates. And then our classes match the beginner, intermediate, advanced level. But in terms of the education piece, 100%, it was extremely difficult because every single person was like, oh, is that like yoga? No. Well, what's a reform machine? Oh, it looks like something you'd see, you know, in a sex dungeon or something like that, because of the pulleys and the straps and, you know, your legs are in the air and all that sort of stuff. So you'd show them, okay, just watch this video. So I used to explain it as pump was heaving back then, pump classes in gym. So it's like a pump class on a machine. It's a full body workout that you your core is engaged the entire time because of the positions that we put your body in and the exercises that we do. But it's a full body workout, and KX especially with high intensity Pilates or dynamic Pilates, it's limited rest as well. So in a traditional reformer class, you do 10 reps of an exercise, you'd get off, you'd put a box on. You'd do 10 reps of another exercise, you'd get off, you'd take the box off. You'd change your spring, you'd get into position. So in a 50-minute class in traditional Pilates, you'd work out for half an hour. You'd walk out going, I don't really feel like I've done anything. You're not sweating. There's, you know, white walls and really boring sort of atmosphere where we're bright, fun, vibrant, limited rest. You know, sweat going straight away. We kind of transition from upper body to lower body really quickly. So, you know, you're constantly doing kind of that supersetting mentality in the gym. Most exercises you would have done in the gym, chest presses, squats, lunges, but on the machine, it challenges balance, coordination, flexibility, so many other elements to fitness, which is why it makes it so difficult. Yes, it's attracted more, especially KX, to females, probably 80-20. The right guys come to KX, and I'll say the right guys. But there are other brands out there, like Strong's a perfect example. Their branding, their you know, with rowing and cycling, that sort of stuff, they're trying to attract more of the younger demographic, the males, which is fantastic. And that's what's great about our competitors, is that everyone offers something slightly different that four studios could be on a high street and that'd all be successful. Because if you love KX, you might not like Strong. Studio Pilates, again, is screen-led. Bit more traditional sense. So there's all these different elements to the world now, but yeah.
Do you want to position Pilates as standalone or complementary? And by that I mean, if someone's got limited time in the week, and they is it instead of going to the gym or including going to the gym?
Yeah, so this is the beautiful thing about Pilates, and especially where KX sits. We look at ourselves as a lifestyle brand, and I have always grown and added things to the business that I hated in other businesses, one being memberships. So the classic membership model is you pay and they don't want you to come. They want to make money when you don't come. It's simple. So, you know, I'm close friends with some big dinosaurs of the fitness industry. That's how they made their millions, of just set and forget. And that's not the mentality I liked. I like the fact you pay for when you come, you don't pay for when you don't. So that's why we're based on class packs. You know, we're trialing a few membership models in some studios, but they're based still on class packs. So it's about your availability. But the beautiful thing about Pilates is that you can be a professional athlete, and with KX, I can absolutely smash them in a class. It doesn't matter how fit you are. There is no ceiling to KX. There's ceilings on other Pilates brands out there, but with KX, the difficulty is kind of, it doesn't stop. But a professional athlete can come and get benefits out of one session a week, or we go to the other end of the spectrum of, like, we call them our KXs, our really avid clients. They do 5-6 sessions a week because every single class is different. Our education with our instructors, they're allowed to freestyle their classes. So you can come 5 days a week, do 5 completely different workouts. Come the following week, you'll do 5 completely different workouts. So nothing is ever the same. So that's the beautiful thing about and being class packed. It's complementary. So you can still go to the gym. I do CrossFit. I still do Pilates. I've got professional athletes that come once a week. I've got runners. I've got swimmers. So it's, you can come once, you can come 6 times. It's completely up to you. And that's the best thing. We have class packs that will facilitate that as well.
I think that makes sense with your strategy as well, not doing the memberships, given, because like you said, then you can treat it as a complimentary. But if it's a membership, it's a choice. It's like, am I doing this one or am I doing that one?
And that's what I hated about it. Yeah, is that I hated going, you know what, I like doing a lot of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now if I'm paying $70 a week, I don't have the money to do lots of things.
Yeah, you've got a gun to your head to go to the one that you're paying for. Exactly. So, yeah.
But what I do love is that it will make you a better runner. It will make you a better swimmer. It will make you a better golfer. Like the fact that it's all core-based, but still you're getting the workout as well. You're walking out going, I did a workout. There's nothing worse than walking out of a studio going, don't even feel like I did anything. I hated that. It's a waste of money.
It feels like the benefits are enormous. But for me, researching for this conversation today, it opened my mind up a lot to what Pilates actually is, from the perception, the filter that I had around it. It's something that my wife needs to do as a rehabilitation process too. Having this conversation now is kind of inspiring me to go, hey, I actually should be implementing this more into my world. So I figure that would be a huge constraint in your business, because you've grown a business to a very small niche in this country. Not many people get to the revenue numbers that you do. And for you to somehow crack that nut, for me as a cross-section of someone who would find it interesting, but up until this point was ignorant to it, once you can crack that nut, it feels like there's a ton of momentum that could end up coming your way, because again, you are a very small niche of businesses that have got to the size that you have. Yeah. And that's on the backdrop of a massive education process for you.
Yeah, and it's still out there. I think we did research last year and only 17% of the market know what reformer Pilates is, which is, I was shocked to go. When you live in the world of Pilates, you're like, well, of course 60% of Australia know what reformer Pilates is. But it's incredible that it's so low. But that's why we the competitors that we have in the space, everyone is generating awareness of reformer Pilates. We are just... We
bringing
are making,
more people to the aisle, right? Exactly, exactly there's right. no problem. Because we had, what's his name from Strong on the show...
Ramsey.
Legend, yeah, 100%. And that's, like you said, he's demographic slightly different, but ultimately, all he's doing is all of his marketing and his efforts and stuff is bringing more people to the aisle, and some of those are going to prefer your style, some are going to prefer his style, but everyone wins.
Correct. And he's doing it the right way in terms of F45. It was also really beneficial to us when their growth took off, because then all of a sudden they paved the way for people paying $70 a week for fitness.
Yeah.
Which that was our biggest struggle in the first 3 years of going, it's too expensive. Like, I'd love to keep doing it, but I've got a $10 a week gym membership. I'm just going to stay there and maybe come and see you once a week. But F45 really paved the way for people spending on their fitness.
Yeah, everyone's doing it right. Correct.
Hey, Aaron, so can we go back to, you got your first store, no one's coming through the doors, still a concept. When did it get to the point where, hey, my store's full, this is a thing, I'm actually doing what I was set out to do? Because there would have been early stages where, you know, you're training your one-on-one person that should be a class.
Yep.
You know, what was that like, and how long did that take?
Yeah, so the average KX Pilates studio earns $45,000 a month across Australia.
Yes.
The first 3 months in business, I've still got my first BAS, it was $8,264 in the 3 months combined.
Quarter.
So it was smashing. A struggle. I was teaching 40 classes a week. I had two trainers just to get me off one night a week and a Sunday, I think. I was doing all the marketing, all the admin, but back then we had no systems. So the booking system was me, a phone call, email, and an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh.
I'd clean the studio at the time. I'd just met my now wife, so I was hanging out at her house because it was close to the studio, bringing towels home at night. She'd help me wash them, fold them, bring them back the next day. When I'd go back, still living with my parents at the time, go back to home, mum would do the same thing with the towels, have dinner waiting for me. Dad let me drive his car for 12 months. So it was a massive bootstrapped 12 months, and it was hard. I had to stop drinking to stay mentally focused. I stopped really going out and socializing because I didn't have the money. I was paying myself like $200 a week. So it was an absolute grind. The first class in the morning was 6 a.m. So I'd get there at 5:30 to prep. I'd sleep during the day on the couch because I'd have, you know, if I had the night shift or a double shift. So I hated that first year. If you asked me, would you ever do a startup again? Absolutely not. I'd buy a business that was already operating and scale it. But the first 12 months was hell. The positive thing at that time, and I think it was everything has to do about timing in business, was Spreets just sold for $42 million that year in 2010. So the jump on it's, the scoop ons, the Spreets, those buying platforms were absolutely booming in 2010, and it had all of my perfect clientele on it. Females between 20 and 45, young professionals, young mums. So, and they ripped you, right? It was like $30, $29 for five classes, but they gave me $9 of it. So it was all the marketing spend on the front end. But the beautiful thing about that was my studios weren't full, so I filled them with people because I knew that if they came through the doors, I'd win them over.
Repeat.
They couldn't go anywhere else.
Which
was another beautiful thing. And I was paying my trainers the same amount. Well, I was most of the trainer, but whether they did one person in the class or 12 people in the class, we were only eight back then, actually, the first year. But they got paid the same amount. So we may as well fill this studio with as many people as possible. So it was only my revenue in December of 2010 was 15,000. I did the deal. I think I sold 1,600 vouchers in January. and my revenue went to 32,000 in 1 month. So I doubled in 1 month.
And January, that, everyone's getting on the New Year's resolutions.
Perfect time. Yeah, yeah. And it got my, because they had like 80,000 people on their database. So they got my brand out there. So that's when it was a real big thing of KX Pilates, you know.
Was that just a mail out? So was it a mail out that they did, like an affiliate type sort of?
It was an EDM. EDM voucher.
So
people had to buy.
Yeah, full of an affiliate setup, basically. Yep.
The money's in the list, Ben.
The money's in the list. That's what I've always said. I met when me and Pete started our business, however many years ago, I said to him, I said, dude, we've got to figure out how to build a list because the money's in the list. So, because that's it. It's the people that follow you, that trust you. But yeah, absolutely. That's crazy. So, because 80,000, you see some big numbers on social media these days with 1.1, all these people with all these followers and stuff. But 80,000 with that kind of return goes to show it's not how big the list is, but how engaged they are.
Well, it's how concentrated it is, so, because you've got your dream customers there. Hearing that story, it's a typical founder story, all in, boots and all, bootstrapped, everything. And it's pretty easy to for it to become your identity, right? Started out as a passion project for you in London when you saw that. You said you're a rebel, you bring it back here. But one of the things that I've admired about looking at your backstory is in 2018, you decided that I've actually got this business to the level that I think I heard you say it was 50 locations that you wanted to grow it to. And then you realized, hey, it's time for me to step back and realize the lane that I'm passionate about and get someone else who's going to grow this business to the next level. That's easy to do on paper and very difficult to do in execution. What can you talk us through the difficult parts of that decision? Because clearly it's been a good decision going forward now, looking back in the rear vision mirror. But at the time, was your identity built into it? Was it hard to hand it over? And what were the dark days in that decision?
Yeah, sure. So in business, I was never the smartest person in the room. And I knew that from an early age. Although control in my life I need, but I delegated everything I was terrible at. So EO, Entrepreneurs Organizations, has been an incredible tool for me and my learning since 2014. And the amount of seminars that I've gone and just light bulb moments have happened and I've come back. And it was at that stage, 15, 16, when I had my first son in 2015. I'd grown the business. It got up to about 50 studios. But I think even about 30 or 40 studios, I'd loved the initial growth. I loved, you know, I'm still close with my initial franchise partners. It was a family. Like, we would sit down, and my wife was in head of marketing at the time. So we would sit down and go, right, what does everyone want to do for a campaign? Like, it was really inclusive. But then it got to a stage where I was growing, I had to hire people underneath me. And then that personal connection that they had with me, they had to go through someone else. So then the politics started, the negativity started, the toxicity started. The classic things in a franchise business that does happen with growth. All of a sudden, they don't have direct contact to me for certain things anymore. They get annoyed about the person they're dealing with, all that sort of stuff. So it also happened at the time, I had a bit of an argument with one of my franchise partners. I ended up in court, which wasn't fun. We both learned some huge lessons. They're still a part of the brand, and we've moved on and kissed and made up. But it was huge lessons at the time going, I don't know if I want to be the leader of this business anymore as CEO. I learned the hard way first of who not to get, because at the time I had a business mentor who was available to become the next CEO. I put him on as COO for 12 months, but he changed the culture way too much for our liking. He had success previously from hierarchy in business, so he straight away put hierarchy in head office. Hired a lot more juniors than seniors so he could be that kind of person bossing around. And it just didn't sit well in my gut. Half of my head office team left. My franchise partners were coming to me saying, you know, great strategy, great execution, great visionary, but in terms of relationships and culture of the business, it's something's wrong and I might be getting out soon. And when your franchise partners, who are your business partners, are coming to you saying, hey.
Yeah.
So 9 months in, we called it quits. But at that time, Selena Bridge, who's now our CEO, she worked with my wife in automotive previously. And we originally sat down with her to try and replace my wife out of the business in marketing. But by that stage, I talked about Curves before. She was the general manager of Curves Australasia. And Curves was declining. But she, every month, the 3 months, I caught up for a coffee. And she was just so passionate about this brand still, so passionate about her people. And I'm sitting going, if you are this passionate about a declining brand. You're going to be so good with a up-and-coming brand. And she even loved the product, the Curves was, you know, and that was an old school kind of 60-year-old, you know, pushing machines around. So it was a very different model to where we were. And finally, when we called it quits with the COO, you know, instead of going down that path of COO transition to CEO, she was just, I named her the first CEO of, you know, non-founding CEO of Cakes Pilates. There was a small equity piece on the table as well to get her across because I couldn't pay her the salaries that she was on. Like she was, they were Northern Finance, so private equity backed. She had huge bonuses, huge salaries, just stuff I couldn't afford. But finally she said yes, which was one of the best, I think the best business decision I've made. And it's been incredible because she is the exact opposite to me in many ways. Her empathy levels are ridiculously huge. Mine are not. she brings to the business expertise that I didn't have in bigger businesses and her marketing background and in that sort of style. Being a female was a huge tick, being, you know, majority female brand. She's fit, health conscious. It just, it goes on and on and on. And the respect that she has for myself and my wife, Andy, being still a family-run business is incredible. So it was very, very difficult at the start. To answer your question, I learnt really hard the wrong way. I nearly ruined the company by my the mistakes that, that I did make. But, you know, thankfully the right decision was made. And it's really, it's a form of exit. So again, I went to a conference and it was about the form of exiting your business by hiring a CEO and all the positives and negatives about it. And I just, a light bulb moment. I was like, awesome. Because it was that stage where I said to myself, it's 60 studios and I'm going to sell. That's what I wrote down in my business plan. In 2010, and I didn't want to sell. I still loved the business. I was passionate about it. I loved my people, and that was. But I knew that I was the wrong person to grow the brand. So it was a perfect win. Obviously, you don't get any cash up front, but you see your brand grow. You can pick your role in the business, and it's just been perfect, perfect fit.
Yeah, I think that self-awareness piece is super important. Like, critical. Love hearing that you made some mistakes, but you're able to listen to people and be self-aware and then make those calls, you know, get rid of the coach after 9 months.
Yep.
You know, like you keep, you know, I think good leaders need to make decisions when they're there to be made. I think mistakes are fine and happen everywhere, but it's going, all right, you're the wrong fit, you've got to go, and then we've got to go in this direction. Sounds like you're able to make those decisions. It sounds like you're being pretty hard on yourself, going, it wasn't me, and I've, you know, employed a good CEO now, but being able to make those moves when you did, you know, obviously looking back now, it's all sort of working out all right.
It's funny, 2 months ago at another interview, at the end of it, the host said, you know what, your superpower is self-awareness. And it's the first time anyone's actually said that to me. I thought I was great at relationships and you know, and making people warm to me quickly, those sort of things. But I was like, you know what, looking back, absolutely. I think one strong thing is to know what you're good at and what you're not. Focus on your strengths and ignore your weaknesses. That's always been kind of my philosophy. But I think also a good leader gets out of the way when it's time to. And even one of my franchise, but the franchise partner I went to a court with, when I hired the CEO, he goes, that's an excellent leadership decision that you knew that, you know, you weren't the right person to carry the business forward. And it's worked out incredibly well. But yeah, it's,
I think you throw that away, but I think anyone who's listening to this should really take that to heart, because I've observed when people grow their businesses that they don't have that ability to do what you did. It's okay to say that you've got this superpower of self-awareness, but it's the actual action of doing it is the hard bit, right? And for you to go, you said earlier, I just delegated the things that I wasn't good at. And you just, for that position to say, hey, look, someone else can take that to another level and I'll just go and play in this other lane that I'm really good at and still be involved in the brand and... Because I always think that there's three archetypes. There's the entrepreneur, the rainmaker, and the manager. And for you, you know, you said, I started this business. I don't even know how to run a business. So you're clearly the entrepreneur mindset, and you need to be out there creating and investing in those ideas and backing yourself like you do. And it just makes a lot of sense. But for a lot of people, the execution of what you did, they find it exceptionally difficult because... It's a me thing. It's an identity thing. This business is me. Every decision. Do you remember that I stayed at my father's house and I borrowed his car and my wife was doing the towels? To let go of that and to say, okay, this is now a bigger organization. To build an organization, it's about people. That's the reason that a lot of people don't get to the level of business that you're at.
You also sit back and go, you CEO, well, you self-named yourself that. So no board hired you as a CEO of your own business.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would argue that, you know, 80% of founding CEOs, if they got out of their way, their business would do better without them.
I'd agree.
You know, you're still the founder. I still own the majority of the business. Me and my wife, I should say. So it's, you still make decisions from a board level what direction the business goes. The day-to-day is the stuff that I hated that I got rid of.
Well played. So.
Can I ask how risky you thought it was when you were trying to get, what was the name of the lady that you brought on?
Selena
Bridge. So yeah, how risky did in your mind at the time did you think it was when you were breaking off equity and stuff? Because I guess you went and you had coffee and all of these things, but you know, that's a big decision to make without seeing her in the role, if that makes sense. Was the setup that was equity she came over, or was it she came over and then she grew into some equity?
Yeah, it was vested. It was a minority equity share vested over 5 and then an additional...
Okay, cool.
Sorry, 3 and an additional 2. So 5 years total to get her complete, but it's linked to her employment. So she quits, we buy back.
And she was obviously excited by the opportunity, because obviously it sounds like she's on a good wicket. So you guys were able to get her emotionally vested.
Not only was the brand on the up, which excited her, we had everything that she didn't have in that previous role. So she had full autonomy of decision making. She came from Curves, which was a master franchise from America. So she had little change that she could make, which is why Curves declined, because there was no innovation. She couldn't do anything. She's like, let's Australianize the brand. They're like, what are you talking about? This is the brand. Don't touch it.
Mm.
So she didn't have that leeway of change that she has in our business. She didn't have that autonomy. She didn't have just the decision-making that she has now. She didn't have. The money superseded it. She's not money-driven, although it is important. It's definitely not something that is number one on her list, which was great. Being a part of the business with the equity share was really important for her. Naming her first CEO was big for her, because she'd never been CEO role before. The fact that I was not just throwing her in the deep end, but I mentored her for 2 years of really like the history of KX. And, you know, straight away she comes in and you got franchises going, oh, Aaron told me I could do this and that. So it's and also COVID hit obviously a couple of years later, so we were there to help her through that. But we make decisions for the right reasons. We're not growing as fast as we can to sell. And she just loves that whole concept. Her, you know, a lot of the purpose of changing lives for the better in KX, which is my personal purpose. Our values are my personal values, but she aligns so well with them. Like she loves the product. She's in a KX studio doing a class a couple of times a week. So it all just kind of fitted and worked out. And she's just a brilliant human at the end of the day. She's just a beautiful person. We get along well as friends. We're different in personalities in terms of how we would run a business. We throw, like at the start, there was a lot of probably more arguments than there is now, because she'd be like, I want to do it this way. And I'd be like, you're being too nice. And she's like, well, you're being too harsh. It's like, my wife's also a great sounding board, because she also has a different personality and different skill set. So from the three of us on a board level, you know, we always think that we end up in the right result. But now, like day to day, she's just passed 5 years. So unless there's really big shit hitting the fan, I don't hear about much in terms of, unless it's international direction or innovation of machinery or something like that. So yeah, it's great.
So you avoid another mistake that founders make is to hire three people that are the same as them.
Absolutely.
So
and that's the biggest mistake they make when they're trying to hire a CEO. Because a lot of people come to me and go, how did you do it? And they always hire someone they want to go have a beer with. It's similar to them. And then afterwards, they're like, well, why am I paying them $100,000 when I can just go back and
do it myself? Yeah. You touched on COVID, but can you take us back? You've got a business that relies on people going into spaces, and then all of a sudden the government makes an announcement to say, for the foreseeable future, no one's moving anywhere. Yep. Can you take us to the point, the oh shit moment that you had?
It was the March 23. When did Dan Andrews do that? It was like 5 or 6 p.m. at night. We had a call at literally half an hour later. And it was funny because it was like, oh, shit. And because I'm very quite relaxed, I was like, oh, well, there's not much we can do. We're closing our doors tomorrow. And then, you know, we drank a few bowls of red that night to go, oh, holy shit. And then woke up the next morning, I was like, no, there is so much we need to do. So annoyingly, being in the fitness industry, we were painted with the same brush as gyms. So we were the first to close and the last to open. You know, even though our machines are 1.5 meters apart, one person's on a machine for the whole club. We were actually COVID safe. but
you're the original COVID safe
the
set up.
COVID safe, you know, everything gets wiped down at the end of the class, everything. So, but they didn't see it that way. So it was really, really difficult. When we had shut down, we did move to online. We wanted to do it properly, so it took a couple of weeks. My wife jumped back in, being the tech genius she is, to all hands on deck for that. But the idea, the first thing was stay afloat. That's it. That was the first message coming to it. So then my financial controller, incredible guy, got everything ready, going, right, this is what we need to do. This, we can stop payments here. We can. So that was fantastic to have that. And this was before the government payments came through.
Were you running a lot of debt at that point?
No, not a lot of debt. And we had a bit of a war chest, which was kind of good, because we were, the 2 years prior, we were going really, really well on a big exponential curve. So we had a few hundred in the bank, which was good. But then the second was be there for our clients. So we knew that we didn't want to shut down and just everyone forget about us. We wanted to get out there. So we did, you know, free Zoom classes. I think I was teaching back doing classes, just, you know, at home sort of workouts. We had 750 on a Zoom call. It was just being there for clients who we didn't know what they were going through, so that when the studios did go back open, they would run through the doors, which happened, which was great. But then eventually we did like free classes, and then if people wanted to, then we're getting feedback, and they were like, the personalization of KX is not here on big Zoom classes. So I was like, that's cool. We'll do a class with 20 people, and one instructor will teach the class, and we'll have another instructor like looking at your form and going, you know, hey, Sally, you know, get that ass up. Was it like? So the banter came back, which they really loved, because they weren't getting that personal connection they had in KX or even in their lives at the time, because everyone was sitting. So it was never a moneymaker in terms of the online classes, but it was just, let's be there for everyone. The hardest thing in COVID, though, was being an Australian company, but our head office was in Melbourne. So that if one state was opening, the next was closing. Our guys, we dropped them back to 3 days a week, but they were still working probably 60 hours a week. And they were working stupid times, stupid days, because, you know, lockdowns would always be on a Sunday or a Monday. You know, I don't have much of my head office team that were there, in those times, we ran them to the ground. Mm. I'm extremely grateful for the amount of hard work they did, but also being in a franchise network, that their tenure in a franchise business kind of came to an end in the head office, because they got pummeled by franchise partners, which understandably, like, they were in fear of losing their business. So there was a lot of emotions. There was a lot of, you know, I jumped in to do a big cultural piece around, you know, where he's here for you still. And, you know, and we started a campaign called, an internal campaign called Belong to Something Better. So just to really gather the troops around and understand that we're going to come out, you know, together and stronger. And, you know, we're back to pre-COVID numbers, which is fantastic. And the good thing was, it took us 10 months last year to get back to pre-COVID. So October was our biggest month last year, because that's when consumer confidence came back, that everything is cool, we can go back into studios. The hardest part was when COVID finished. No one wanted to go into studio in December of 21 because they thought they were going to get sick. So they didn't. So December was terrible and our government support shut off. Then everyone got sick at Christmas seeing their friends and family. So then everyone had COVID in January of 22. So then no one came to the studio again. So those 2 months, we went to like terrible numbers. So then we had to crawl our way back last year until October. So it's good. And now we're back to pre-COVID numbers, which is awesome.
Yeah. So how many are we up to now, Aaron?
103 in Australia. We've got 10 internationally across Indonesia, Singapore, Taiwan, China, and New Zealand, all masters. So, which means they're just in their infancy stages, getting their kind of ducks in a row of learning the business before they press the franchising button in their own country to grow, which is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, great. I love the, you know, when we spoke earlier and you explained, you know, the model of the way you guys run, and, you know, you're a share of that revenue piece. So their success is your success,
yep.
Which I think is super, super healthy. And it sounds like you guys aren't in a rush. You know, you're in for the long haul and you're into the sustained growth and that sort of thing. What are the goals? It sounds like they're not crazy, harsh goals that it's like, we need to hit this, we need to hit that. It's more of an authentic, organic type growth. But what, you know, what are the goals for KX moving forward, and how global is global, and, you know, what are the plans there?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got a lax goal of 500 studios globally. The time frame is, you know, 5 years from now, five to seven. We don't have, like Selena doesn't have the, you need to be doing this number every year. We want the right people. We want long-term. I don't want her to make the mistake of hiring and getting franchise partners on board who then we've got to try and get rid of in 2 years' time. That's the hardest job.
Yeah.
Toxic franchise partners that should be somewhere else, you just don't want them in your network. So that's kind of the goal. These the countries that I just spoke about, I'll start in Australia. So Australia, we've mapped out 150 to 200 studios across Australia. And again, the beautiful thing about the revenue model is if I have one studio that's full, the franchisor makes the same amount of money if two studios are half full. So that's why we don't want to put one in every corner. I'd rather less studios that are pumping. Yeah. As much as a client hates going, I can't get into KX Noosa, it's so busy. I sit back and I'm laughing. And yes. Oh, that's awesome.
By design.
Because it creates it creates exclusivity, yes. Demand. Like, oh, you know, can you even get into KX? It's, you know, so yeah. That's a great marketing piece for the brand too. So brand that's where it sits in Australia. The countries I just mentioned will start to grow in 24, which is really, really exciting. And these are the countries that had no government support. So, I mean, we've had Indonesia, Jakarta since 2018, but like got absolutely smashed in COVID. She had to pay her staff half their wages and had no government support. So luckily she was cashed up in the back end that she could do that. New Zealand just opened 12 months ago, so they're going really well. Singapore opened in April this year. So the best thing about COVID that came out of it was the international expansion, because people like boutique fitness, especially in those Southeast Asian areas, are really up and coming because the big box gyms have dominated for so long. A lot of them closed down in COVID because of the huge costs involved. And now the smaller players are coming, like our perfect franchise partners that want to get into fitness, they want to change careers and help people change lives. So America's a big place. So the Strongs, the Studio Pilates are starting to make their way into America. Well, Studio Pilates is already there. I know Strong sold a few things over there. So that would be our play next, which is really exciting for us. Club Pilates is the biggest Pilates brand in the world, owned by Exponential Fitness. They've got 800 and something locations in the States. Wow. They're selling territories, but they're selling out of territories. So people are now looking for other brands to open, which is why it's exciting that our three brands can meet there. Canada will come off the top of that, and then probably Europe next. So we've got some exciting plans, but it's really about finding the right people. No different than, so we don't go and actively look for people. They actually come to us, which is nice.
Mm. Yeah.
Even in Australia, half of our network is, they were trainers that came through the ranks, which was why franchising was the way I was going to grow this business. Because like me as a trainer, I thought I could do it better and I thought I could do it by myself, but I had no idea about business. So trainers get to us going, I want my own studio, but I have no idea. So it's like, great, let's join forces. You know how to run a great studio in terms of classes. We can teach you how to do the business side of things. That's why the franchise model works. So the trainers are half of it. Clients are the other half of our network. So all of our growth is actually internal. Clients going, oh, and I've just had a baby, I want to come back into the workforce, but I don't want to go back into corporate, or I hate my corporate career and I want a lifestyle decision. So, and I love KX Pilates. So both sides are brand ambassadors already, which is great. They scream KX to the masses. So it's just about them teaching about business and running it. So it's great. And the same thing, international partners. Our New Zealand girl got kicked back to New Zealand in COVID, which was a great thing for us because she fell in love with New Zealand again, met a guy who's in fitness and education, and her father was in financial franchising for 20 years. Great fit. Our Singapore guys grew up in Perth, loved KX in Perth, went awesome, let's move back. They already have some other boutique fitness studios in Perth, so great operators. Jakarta, she got educated in Melbourne for 6 years, loves Melbourne, and was looking for something to take back to her country. And then China was a joint venture model that they were looking to bring something back to the Chinese population in terms of the Pilates, and Taiwan is an offset of that. And again, the fitness space is going really well. So we're really happy with where we sit.
Yeah. Can I ask with the States, I know from memory, the Strong guys, they partnered with another master brand or something over there. What's your plan? You sound like you guys, Selena, you're going to run your own show, or you're going to run Point yourself, or are you looking to partner with one of these
guys? Yeah, we're probably still figuring that out. There's two main options we'll go is direct franchising, which is no different than selling franchises in Australia. But obviously the cost to support that is higher versus selling master franchises in, I would say, areas or multiple states. So most people break up. You either break up in states or you break up into, like, say, seven quadrants of America. So we're kind of still figuring that out. But the one thing we know is still talking to people about opening a couple of studios because we need the brand on the ground to then... Americans are like, awesome, we'll take your brand and grow it. But no one's willing to risk that first studio in a big business to go, okay, they're like, we want you to come over and do it. You be the concept studio. And my wife's like, we are not moving to America. There are too many shootings and the kids are not going to school over there. Otherwise, because I loved America. As I said, I lived in Colorado and we go back there on holidays. I got married in Vail in Colorado. So there's a huge affinity to it. But living there for us is out of the question. Selena has a young family too. So that's out of the question. So it's really about finding the right partner. So we're still going through that recruiting stages at the moment to get a couple of open. But then who knows what will happen from there. So I think we might go down the direct franchising route at this stage. Again, it's really hard dealing with the big companies that are like, they sell you the dream. We're going to open 1,000 studios for you. But again, they come from a classic transactional franchise model.
Yeah, well, and it moves away from the culture, the thing 100%. That's the reason that you started first and you're still here feeling fresh is because you haven't done that. So it's almost like it's up on the wall up there, you know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Yep.
Sort of sticking with that.
It's good.
What's the moat that you're going to put around? What is the moat that is around KX? So if we go back to that Noosaville model that you just described before, it's shard, it creates the exclusivity. It will breed a copycat, right? And then quite often the complaint with the franchise model is someone says they're excited up front because you give them the brand, you give them the systems, and it's a plug and play. But then over time they go, well, they're taking the cream off the top, and we could do it ourselves. And so clearly there's some goodwill in the brand. But what are you guys doing to build that moat around that traditional challenge that franchise models have that could differentiate you guys?
Yeah, so a few things there. One, Melbourne got hit pretty hard because we started in Melbourne, and we sold territories originally. So when our trainers came to us saying, hey, I want to have a studio in South Yarra, it's like, sorry, it's under a different territory. They're like, that's cool, I'll just open my own studio. So KX copycats, as we call them, they're prominent in Melbourne. There's a few brands that have a few studios, but they do very much the same style of training that KX do with different branding on the door. We educated them, so they don't know anything else, right? The IP in the brand sits in our education department, but also in the machines. So again, when Selena came on board 2018, I always had in the back of my head I needed to create our own equipment that was specific to the brand, that no one could go anywhere else to have that experience. And that was based off the back of a licensing expo in Singapore, when people would come and we had a beautiful big poster in the background of our machines in our classes, and they're like, you know, is that your machine? It's like, well, we use Balance Body, it's the best brand in the world for Pilates, we customize it slightly, but no, you could probably do the same thing. They're like, nah, we're out, because especially in Asia, it's going to get copied straight away. And funnily enough, our first studio in China got copied by our head trainer, which was quite sad.
Yes.
But my business partner over there took her to court, and as he tells me, she's being badly punished. I don't know what that means. Let's just leave that there.
This is a child-friendly podcast.
So that's when I knew. So I went back to Balance Body originally and I said, hey, how about it? They're like, we're a generic Pilates manufacturer, and you know, to stop our conveyor belts, to put your boutique sort of bespoke machine on it would cost us too much money on the other end, so it's a no. So it was only until, so I went down the path of manufacturing out of China. We had 95 models made of the KX Forma V3, we called it. So there's three versions made that we finally went on. We took it into market in the company studios. It wasn't perfect. And because we were using such an incredible brand for so many years, I knew that wasn't going to fly in my franchise partner's studios. And it was only really because of the China joint venture model and before COVID, how much he wanted to grow. My Chinese manufacturer couldn't do the same numbers that he needed. So we went back to Balance Body. And then again, I've got a great relationship with my supplier here in Australia, which is almost the Balance Body of Australia, who finally convinced Ken, who's the founder of Balance Body, to say, right, Aaron Series is going global. You need to seriously talk to him about making his own machine. And then COVID hit. I had a lot of time on my hands because the studios weren't open. Selena was running it. So then that's when we created the KX Forma, Balance Body KX Forma, which is now in 90% of our studios. The best thing about that is it's backed by Balance Body, who are very, very litigious for people copying them. you can't get that anywhere else except in a KX Pilates studio. We have security on them, so if a KX Pilates studio ever closed down, we get the machines back. They can't go into market. You can't go into any other studio in the world and have the same experience now that you can in a KX Pilates studio. And the bed has been specifically made for our style of fitness. So there's, you know, a ton more exercises that can be done on it. The rest between exercises is now limited. The intensity can be increased, and then the exclusivity of having that product is huge for us. Mm. So it sits in our IP, which is really, really cool. So that's the moat from the copycats, I would say, in terms of, and also our education partner, our education programs of that KX trainer. So we're looking to now educate the market and going into education, but we will be available for someone like yourself if you wanted to learn about Pilates until a certain point, and then you can only go to that stage four if you were going to work for the company.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But I also love the fact now with the Strongs, with the Studio Pilates, everyone rising, no different, you know, people trust brands.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always going to be a mum and dad studio that people like the independence. But I think the days of now, because it's a mature industry now, is that the big brands will now start to dominate. No different than the 24/7 gyms. Like, when was the last time you went to an independent 24/7 gym? You just don't anymore because you go to the big brands. That's what's happening now in Pilates world. And we were just very, very lucky that we got our timing right. We were one of the first to market. So it's worked in our favor for sure.
The what drives you as a business owner now? Because we just talked about the global expansion. Like, you could make a very tidy living by just staying in Australia and not have the complexity that goes from being international. So what drives you as a business person now? Because I'm assuming there's probably a level of financial stability and financial independence that you have.
Yep.
So what's the next North Star for you?
Yeah, look, it was my dad. He did my books when I first started in that first year. I dreaded every single month doing the books with my old man. But after three studios, I think we opened our third studio in 2012, he's like, you know, this is pretty good income. Like, why do you want a franchise? Why do you keep going? And money's never been my driving force. The purpose of this brand is to change lives for the better and get KX into as many people's hands as possible to experience. Because I honestly feel like we change people's lives. There are people in our studio that still stop me today. If I go into the Noosa studio, perfect example. You've changed my life. I couldn't walk properly 7 months ago because of the injuries that I had, and this has completely, you know, given me back the freedom of life and those incredible things. My trainers come up and say, thank you for starting KX. It has changed my life. I love teaching. I love my clients. My franchise partners have tears on their eyes when they open their doors because starting their own business has been a dream of theirs for years, and we've assisted and helped them do that, becoming financially free for my franchise partners as well. A couple of my big dog franchise partners probably earn more money than I do. You know, so that's a really, really good feeling, but it's just getting it around the world. I just love that. I don't know, the sky's the limit. I think you sit back in Australia and it's capped, and I just don't think anything in my life has ever been capped.
Mm.
So the idea to do it, but in terms of, we will only do it, we will never take a risk to then jeopardize the company. Australia is still the mothership. Our franchise partners in Australia are still number one. That's why we look for the right partner in a country, because then we can deal with that one partner and then they grow the brand the right way, the way that we do it. And all of our business partners, if they were sitting here, our international partners, or even our franchise partners, or even Selena, we talk very similar languages. So you'd see the passion where it comes from. We're not here to make money. Profit is good, don't get me wrong. And that's why we're in business, but it's not the number one driver of it. It's really about changing people's lives.
Well, success leaves clues, Pete. Any business that's purpose-led versus commerce-led, you know, that's how the vision stays, that's how the business grows, and the money becomes the scorecard rather than the focus. That's clearly a big part of your success.
Yeah, and I was really lucky. I was in a failed nutritional startup in my late teens that I luckily went to a conference in Las Vegas with my sister. And Jim Rowan was a keynote speaker, a very famous keynote speaker.
That's the late Jim Rowan. Yes. Favorites.
Jim Rowan is the best.
And he was on stage, and I got to see him. And I still remember to this day, he got up there and the first thing he said was, care more about your customers than you do about the money you will make from them, and you will be successful. And I thought about that quote every day of my life since I started KX. It's customer-centric. We put the customer first. The franchise partner is our customer. We put them first. And if you make them successful, you will be successful. And that's how.
And I think until the day you sell, that's always going to work. And I think that the day you sell is when that's kind of when the big business takes over. It kind of flips it, doesn't it? Yep. And they turn it into money. And this, you know what I mean? And that's, yeah.
And that's why you keep it, keep on the path that you're on. Yeah. You feel like it's going to be a pretty good product for a long time.
Yeah. So there's no plan. Like you wrote down in 2010 that 60, you sold it. You were going to sell at 60 and you got to 60 and realized that was, you know, you didn't want to do that.
Yep.
Is that off the table now? Because most people that do what you're doing, that's why they're doing it, right? They're building it up, they get it pumping and then they sell. You've clearly, you're the infinite game, I suppose. You're you know, with no end to it. Yeah, is that... You don't think you'll ever sell? Like, is it, you know, you just love it that much?
I'd never say never. I think at some stage we will need to take money off the table just for security of our family.
Yep.
Whether that would be a percentage, not the whole thing, I'm not sure. Well, it's nice not having to really think about it.
Yeah.
The goal is not to grow and sell. The goal is to just keep growing. I love the fact, and you know, my wife Selena, we still love the fact that it is a family-run business. We're in it for the right reasons. You know, she doesn't have these, you know, figures banging down the door. She's got to hit every year, otherwise.
It's the secret sauce. Has to be the secret sauce.
Mm. Do you de-risk at all at the moment? You said that at some point I've got to take it off the table, but is there an incremental are you parking in property? Are you parking in other businesses? Are you a crypto? Do you love art? Is there something?
Well, my wife put it back into a KX Pilates studio in Noosa this year. That was fun. When she got up there last year, she's like, if we're not going anywhere, we're the only brand that's not here. And she was going, so she loves KX Pilates as a client. She's never been a trainer. And she went to all the other brands and she was doing F45. And she's like, nothing is hitting it. I'm just going to open a KX. It's like, well, we're not opening a KX together. Go and find someone else to do it with because you're not doing it by yourself. So then she grabbed my best mate's wife, who was also up in Noosa. So they run it together as well. So, no, it's your property, share portfolio, and business as well. I've got a few investments in a few businesses too, being in the EO space, which is pretty exciting to see where that's going to land. So I like the idea of investing in business as well because I get business. I love business. I love the, you know, you're really backing the person at the end of the day.
Mm.
And that's whenever I call up my accountant, I was like, oh, I want to do this. So like, do you back the person? If you back the person, we're okay. We'll
100%.
Sign off on it. So it's, it's really interesting. And because it's nice, I'm not tech at all. So then to invest into some tech stuff that I have no idea about, but back the person who's running it, the genius in the front, that's pretty exciting. So yeah. But in terms of that, we, you know, 90% is still in the business, in the brand, growing the asset.
Back the jockey, not the horse, Bryce.
100%. So my final question is that the best way that you can impart your knowledge into others then by take, because it's hard, I'd imagine your time is limited, right? So sometimes the best way to get a slice of your experience is to get into someone else's business with them and just impart that over to them and say, here's some of the lessons that I learned through the journey. Because you said I wouldn't do a startup again. I'd get another business and I'd scale it. So that's probably a good way for you to mentor others.
Yep.
In limited time resources that you have?
Yeah, I mentor a few people in that same space, which is just, it's more of a giving back as well. The franchise space is really, it's really friendly in terms of, because franchising is just really growing the same thing multiple times. So it's not growing a company to the masses and going through all the challenging things. I mean, you do go through challenging things of growth, but at the end of the day, we open KX Pilates Studios. We've nailed that now. The systems and processes have all obviously increased and gotten better, but it's also very different than growing an independent company on the side. So, I do help mentor. But in terms of that, I mean, my focus at the moment is my family. I've got an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 2-year-old. And my wife's needed to go back and jump in the studio for her purpose and significance of her life. I get enough from what I do as the founder and still the owner of the business. But, you know, you have limited time with your kids when they're young. And that's where I'm going to be for the next probably 4 to 5 years. I can always jump back in the business after that. But I also like the idea, if just from a business point of view, I like the idea of your core business being your vehicle to then make money from, to then use to invest into other businesses, other things.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't think I'll ever sell KX, because the startup nature I'd probably never go back to. But in terms of it's something that even if my investments fail, you've got your core to come back to that's always going to be your driver. And the beautiful thing about franchising is you get to a certain stage, and it's definitely not an overnight success, but you know, at the stage we're at, with a certain amount of numbers in head office, after that, it's kind of blue sky. You just throw on an operations manager every 20 studios and away you go. But it takes a long time to get there. So the blue sky is nearly there, you know what I mean? So it's still, it'd be silly of me. And that's why there's been a few private equities floating around, wanting to have chats, because they know where we sit.
Yeah.
We're not very valuable on paper at the moment. That's why they want to snap us up, because they know the blue sky is coming to be quite valuable in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, and they change the priority on you.
Well, we can talk about that for days as well.
No, awesome, Aaron. This has been an awesome chat, mate. And congratulations for what you've done to this point. And like you said, the blue skies feel like they're still yet to come. So well done.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well done. Now, we've got our segment, 5 rapid-fire questions. What do you find more fulfilling, personal training or managing a fitness franchise?
Personal training. The one-on-one connection with a client's pretty special.
Love it. Where do you get more inspiration from? Fitness cultures in the US or in Europe?
US.
Love it. What's key to success? Overcoming financial challenges or mastering the marketing strategies?
Paying someone to overcome the financial challenges, and then the marketing strategies is more exciting. That takes. I think the marketing keeps the brand on top. Mm. It's more exciting.
Being self-aware enough. Yeah, superpower. What do you value more, physical strength or mental resilience?
Oh, looking forward to this answer.
I think they are actually intertwined, because I need to physically exercise to be mentally fit.
Ooh. Good answer.
Ooh,
good answer.
You weren't expecting that, were you, Bryce?
I wasn't.
There you go, Bryce.
But it's insightful, though.
Bryce is just writing that down. What's more critical in fitness, community building or the personal achievements?
Community building.
Yeah. Love it. Love it, Aaron. This has been awesome, mate. Anything you want to leave us with? Any lesson that you think you missed that you want to get out there?
Another big lesson I tell to up-and-coming entrepreneurs is to innovate inside their business. So the mistakes I learned early on when the money started coming in with the franchise fees was, what else can I do? So I opened up other brands. And if I look back now and I debadged them 4 years later, the time, energy, effort of those other brands, although they were successful in their own right, if I just focused and innovated inside my business, look at the pillars of how, what else can help you grow your core business versus looking external to the shiny toys that, you know, are exciting at the time for an entrepreneurial mindset. But really, I think the whole serial entrepreneur is quite a, it's not a myth. It's very, very difficult to do for majority of people.
Yeah.
So you can focus on your one thing, make it better, innovate it to make it change and adapt and better and be more successful than looking outside.
Yeah.
Success is not doing the basics well. Success is always doing the basics well. Correct. So that's another way of saying what you said. Just keep refining, keep iterating, keep making it simpler, remove the complexity. I love that. That's good.
Great advice.
Well done. No, Aaron, this has been awesome. Anything else, lads? Are we pretty good? Been a great chat, mate. Really appreciate you coming in. Good. Awesome. All right, guys, that's pretty much it. Please like, share, subscribe, follow, all that sort of stuff. As you know, 2024, we're donating $1 for every follow, subscribe that you do. And please, guys, this charity, the worst disease you've never heard of, Benjamin, I'll try and get this right. Epidemiolysis bullosa. So the EB charity, it's a super important one, guys. So please, you know, hit those subscribe buttons, hit those follow buttons. We'll donate for you. There'll be a link in the bottom where you can donate directly. But yeah, crazy skin disorder that's in, you know, the most vulnerable, obviously, you know, in our children. So please like, share, subscribe. All right, guys, see you at the top.
You.
Find a better version of themselves if they choose.
You just need to go start some shit.
Action is all that matters.
Be a man of your word.
I think I look back now and I'm like, whoa, that took some guts.
Be kind, be kind, be kind.
See you at the top.
New episode every Wednesday.